Welcome back to episode 68 of Chess Journeys, Tales of Adult Improvement. Here at Chess Journeys, we seek to highlight both the highs and glories of rating gain and dive into the plateaus and the pits of despair below. If you want to support the show, you can go to Patreon Chess Journeys. I want to thank Jay Tuttle, Jay Garrison, Donna Rich Burgess, Brandon Halsey, David Shriver, and Lindsay Newhall. If you want to really support the show, use our sponsor, Chessable. They're awesome. They're doing all kinds of great things there. I just downloaded a new openings course. Am I ready to announce which one? No, I'm not. But I'm really getting into that. I'm still working on the Checkmate Patterns manual, having some fun with that, trying to get it down. But essentially, if there's anything you're working on, I'm sure you can find it on Chessable. And by the way, secret note, if you don't know, when you're working through opening stuff, you don't have to just do lines. I like to go into read mode and just read through what the author is saying about how this opening works the first few times I look at it. And only then do I start actually doing the spaced repetition memorization. That's just a little helpful thing in case you didn't know that. Okay. If you're wondering, how could I see more of this guy? I've actually been streaming quite a bit more on Dr. Skull_TinyGrimes. And I'm putting these videos on YouTube. I'm mostly going over Karpov games right now. And most of the time is me going, wait, what? I thought we had an attack now, and now you're over on the queen side? What's going on here, Karpov? So there's a lot of me being stupefied, but I think it's a lot of fun. If you want to appear on the show, you can fill out the Google form in the show notes. We all want to hear your story. But it is now time to get to our guest of the day. It is Martin Eustason. Some people know him as SayChess on Twitter. He's a chess Twitter personality. He's a co-founder of the Chess Punks. He's a podcaster. He has a chess publishing empire. And he has a new program called the Chess Training Accountability Group. I think we're going to dive in deep on that because I think it'll be quite relevant for us adult improvers. So, Martin, welcome to the show. And have you had a chance to play any chess yet today?
Thank you, David, Kevin, for inviting me to the show. And I haven't played any chess today. I have looked at a 20 plus 10 game that I played against a FIDE master yesterday. That was quite interesting. So I spent some time looking over my mistakes from that game.
How'd the game go?
Yeah, it was. I had the black side of the London system, and I have played the London system myself. But somehow I fare quite badly against the London system because, it's a good opening. So, I think I managed okay, and I got an interesting position that.
Okay.
Yeah, I burned a lot of time thinking over, and then I decided to. A sacrifice didn't work, and I retreated slightly, and then I blundered, and then the FIDE master was relentless.
Mm-hmm. So the FIDE master didn't give you a free piece.
I lasted for 70 moves or so. So that's always something.
That's good. Do you play an early C5 against the London, or are you just kind of like the slower buildup?
Yeah, I'm trying the early ish C5 and then sometimes queen to B6 but this game developed slightly different, but
okay. I'm curious if you have this problem that I have. It's like when I play an opening and I really like it and I've convinced myself like this opening is really good, I have a really hard time playing against it. So I switched to the Karo Khan. I spent all this time playing it. And then I was still playing E4 and someone played it against me. And I was like, whoa, it's the unbeatable Karo Khan. And I like completely crumbled psychologically. It was bizarre.
Yeah. I think I'm seeing some demons there with the London system because, all the good players say it should be easy to deflect. But I have some issues with it on the black side. So, and I should know the tricks from playing it with the white pieces. But it's strange. I need to dive deeper into it at some point.
Yeah, it's interesting how that works. All right. This is my first question today. With how much you've done and accomplished in the chess world, what are you most proud of? Because you've done all of these awesome things, like you have 7 books you've published, you have a podcast now. Like, what are you most proud of?
I think publishing my book Blindfold opening with Civilization is the book I'm most proud of because I really like the result of it and the layout and also I selected all the puzzles myself and added annotation and so far it has only received 4 and 5 stars reviews on Amazon, so but it is a little bit there's not so many people have discovered it yet as some of my other books, so I hope it will surface someday, but I think that is what I'm most proud of, and I hope one day also to reach my rating goal of 2000 feeder rating, so and I think I had a long plateau at 1600 and I made a jump to 1800, and I think also that is an accomplishment as an adult. So, but yeah. I have ambitions for more.
Nice. I guess the thing that baffles me most about you as I'm like reading over your bio and getting ready for this is like, how do you possibly have time to actually get better at chess while doing all these other amazing things? Like, have you found a cheat code where you have like 40 hours in a day? Like, what's going on over there?
I would say like I sometimes think about like what could I have achieved if I have invested all this time purely for chess improvement and not just spending it on chess Twitter, on writing chess books or whatever, or writing my newsletter and stuff like that. Could I have improved a lot more? And I think the answer I tell myself is like I would probably have burned out on chess because I find it quite fun to engage with people and share the common interest of this hobby, chess, and share the joy and discover new angles, so I think it motivates me to like have a community and engage with people, and also I think it's a little bit fun to have a small little be a chess creator in some way and have a little bit side business going, so that's also fun.
Okay. Yeah, I agree with this idea of if you just pour yourself into chess improvement, maybe you would have been like 1850, right? But then it's like you would have given up all these amazing things you've done. You wouldn't be as embedded in the community. I often feel the same way about this podcast. It's kind of like it's hard with a full-time life to then find time to podcast, but I enjoy it because it does make me a part of this community, right? And it's just more fun for me to reflect on my improvement while also having this podcast. If I was just improving on my own, who knows, after 2 years, I might have been like, wow, I am not nearly as good as I would have liked to have been at this game. Maybe yeah. I'll go play a game I'm less bad at. Like, I might have done that. It's possible. I don't know. And so I definitely understand that.
Yeah. And also, like, I started playing chess when I was 19, 18 years old. And and I played through university. And As I said, I did not really push through this barrier at 1600 feet and I stayed there. And it was only when I really engaged in this, the chess community and made all these things, books and newsletter and stuff that I really saw any improvements. So I think it's part of it, and I think I would not discard it as wasted improvement time.
Yeah, so you heard it here, everybody. Stop working on chess and just start publishing chess books, and then boom, 200 points.
Start your own chess podcast as well.
Yeah, the chess podcast has not really worked out for me for like huge rating gains. We'll see. It does look like I'm probably going to crack 1700 finally after this tournament ends my next game, unless I like get paired way down and lose, which, you know, anything's possible with me, Martin. You never know.
Well, that sounds great.
All right. Well, let's go all the way back to your backstory. Did you first learn chess in college, or did you learn like how the pieces moved as a kid? Did you have any childhood experiences with chess?
Like my childhood experience was just like this via my dad, who played a little bit chess when he was young, and he told me like he played Bent Larsen in a simul and lost in six moves or something. He told me so.
He should have been like, and I beat Bent Larsen in six moves.
Yeah, but no, it was not the. Not like that, but yeah. He played him in the simul, and maybe he That's should awesome. Just end the story there. And he we had the our first computer was we had this chess game with the animation in blue and red knights, and they could fight each other these pieces. And as a child, I found that game was really fascinating. And yeah. And my dad, he told me he played a game against the computer, and he said that one move he made that the computer had to think through the whole night to find a move.
Yeah, I think, was it called Battle Chess? Do you know?
Yeah, I think it's Battle Chess, yes.
Okay, I had it as well, and I had the same problem. I was like, I need a better computer to run this game, because it was like the animations itself would be like a 5-minute battle. And you're like, I just want to make the next move, computer. Can you resolve this battle?
No, I actually asked Lychess if they wanted to like implement the Battle Chess piece set in the and they said it was not completely impossible. So if people start requesting it, maybe we can bring it back.
We can make it happen.
Yeah, let's do it.
Well, what we really need them to do is have like the 3-minute animations during bullet games. I think that would really shake up the scene.
Yeah.
Okay, yeah, so you picked up the pieces as a little kid.
Yeah, but I never really played any chess. I always liked strategy games, board games, and computer strategy games. But not I didn't play any chess before reaching adulthood, and it was after I got bored of playing poker, online poker, and then I saw that the world championship was going on, and Yasser Seirawan was commentating it, and then I started following that, and thought that was interesting, and then I went backpacking with some friends, and we played some chess while we were traveling, and had fun with it.
That sounds amazing. That kind of sounds like the highlight of chess. Like, you should have stopped there and just been like, this is as fun as it gets. Backpacking, yeah. And playing chess. None of us know what we're doing. We're just having a good time. What was the world championship?
It was like the FIDE championship where Topalov won in 2005. Okay. I can't remember it that but I just remember Yasser Seirawan was commenting it, and that caught my interest.
Was this pre-poker boom then, or was it during the poker boom?
I think it was after the first poker boom.
Okay.
But I was a poor student, so I was playing like limit poker and the lowest stakes, and maybe a little bit no limit poker, but.
Gotcha. Yeah, the poker boom was so amazing that my cousin wasn't like a poker champion by any means, but he was just good enough where he could play with other players who weren't very experienced online. And basically like earn enough to make his way through college. It was kind of amazing. Yeah. I was like, do you have a part-time job? He's like, yeah, I play poker. I was like, wait, what? So yeah, the poker boom was quite interesting. And then all those people left, and now it's just really good players again. And it's like,
yeah. Okay. So I don't think I have a chance today.
Exactly. I was doing pretty well when there were utterly terrible people playing poker. okay.
But so then like
What age are you as you're backpacking and playing chess?
And 19 years old. Okay. I went to Moscow and we took the Trans-Siberian Railway. We played on the train. It was like, I think it was a 6-day journey to Beijing. And oh, wow. we decided to take the journey without any stops, only in Ulaanbaatar in Mongolia, which was quite a long ride. So like we had games, I was the best, and my two other friends was not as as good as me, so they were together, those two, and they they had like thought about a move for like 1 hour or something, like discussing. So like we could use the whole day on one game.
Yeah, it's like daily chess.
Yeah, yeah, yes, just live.
See, I'm just imagining like a whole bunch of Russian grandmasters, because there's like thousands of them, you know, like on your train, being like, no, let me teach you how to do this. And then you come off that train ride and now you're 1600.
Yeah, yeah, it was not like that. We didn't meet any Russian grandmasters in the train. Just
that's unfortunate.
Yeah, yeah, but it was fun.
Okay, is that what sort of ignited you then, between that experience and watching Yasser's commentary?
And then like I found out that there was a local chess club just 200 meters from where I lived. So I just walked down and asked if I could join. And then soon after, I played my first over-the-board classical tournament and started playing. So, and then soon after, I joined like the league, the team matches and stuff like that. And so then I played maybe 3 or 4 tournaments a year, some years less. And But I had a lot of other interests, and there was a lot of partying in those university days and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. So it never had my complete focus.
Gotcha. And what were you like as a chess player then? Like, did you, after those first couple of tournaments, were you immediately like in that 1600 range, or did you start around 1000 and build? Or I don't even know what FIDE is like.
I think my first FIDE rating was about 1600, but I didn't get that after some years. So I got a Danish rating, and the Danish and the FIDE ratings are closely connected. So like my first Danish rating was about 1300.
Okay.
I think it was reasonably well, I jumped around to 1500 and then bumped it up to 1600 and then spent the years on that plateau.
Okay, so let's start with the 1300 to 1500. What did you do in that stretch that you feel like was most helpful?
I remember that I played a lot of games on what is called play chess now, and then my first chess book was Chernev's book with the classic annotations for each move. I can move by
logical
move.
Chess move by move.
Yeah, logical chess. Yes, and then also one of Jesse Saarinen's books, Winning Chess or something. I think that it was. So those two books got me started.
Okay. Yeah, Ben Johnson would definitely applaud you on that and say those are two great starter books. So you made good choices.
Yeah, but I didn't really have any, like, it was a strange time that it, like, compared to now, because now there's this whole community and you can get input from everywhere. And I feel like when I think back on it, I was just myself, like, searching whatever bookstore, and then picked up some books, and then I had no idea what to expect and what was good. And that was maybe I don't think I was part of any online things back then, so it was like a desert.
Yeah, I had a very similar experience in that time period where it was like I didn't know who to ask, and online was like very new. It was like around 2000. I just went to a bookstore and I was like, this Yasser guy must be good. He's got 5 books here. I'll get the first one in the series and we'll see where it goes from there.
Yeah. But I think what helped me really was like playing, starting just head on with the long classical games and playing in a club. I think that helped me a lot. Okay. I can miss that being able to play all this tournaments, and that it's a little bit harder now when I I have I have four kids now, so and it's a little bit more challenging to join these tournaments and commit. So now my last tournament is back in the Easter holiday. So yeah,
I hear you. As a parent myself, it's so hard to slip away for a whole weekend. I've somehow convinced my family that not this weekend, but next weekend, I'm actually gonna play in a tournament. So five classical games. We'll see how it goes. But I'm excited to get the opportunity to do it because, like you said, it is it's kind of rare. Yeah. So what is it about long classical games that you think really helped? Like, why not just play 1,000 blitz games?
I think like when you are a beginner, like you make a lot of mistakes, obviously, and having time to think helps you spot those some of those mistakes at least before making them, and also like the seriousness of the competition in the club also, like you know, it's you're going to be punished for like 4 hours if you make a mistake. So like there's something at stake, and when you blunder a piece in a blitz game, you can always just start a new game, and it's not that important. So I think that helps you like really focus, and you don't want to make any blunders.
Yeah, that's such a great point. Even the other day I had an over the board game where I made a slight inaccuracy, right? I wouldn't call it a blunder. The engine still says it's even, but now I have this weak pawn that I just have to spend the whole game defending. And it was such a miserable experience. You know, I was like, I don't care if the game is equal. It's still very challenging to defend this. If it was a blitz game, I could have easily seen myself just being like, whatever, we're going for some crazy complications here. If I lose, I lose. I'm not going to suffer through this nonsense. But like you said, you commit to this long over the board game, and that's your one game. It could be your one game for the week, for the month, whatever it is. You don't want to get in that spot. I think that's such a great point.
Yeah. And also like during my stay at university, I also like I made a search for internship as part of my education at an organization called Danish School Chess, and they had a project for in Copenhagen where the kids in from first to seventh or eighth grade would get chess on their weekly schedule for 2 weeks, I think. And then we will come out and learn teach them the rules and organize it play and they would also have we also made math with chess integrated, and we also made a math book that they could teach in class and stuff like that using chess. So that was also a fun experience, and also a good way to like teach chess early on. I think that was also helpful in improving my own chess. Like, I need to explain how to mate with a king and rook, and how do I teach that to a second grader? That can be a really good exercise actually to teach others chess, even that if you are not like a master player yet, it's good to teach others.
Yeah, and you can be almost any rating to teach beginners chess. I totally agree. It helped me cement my fundamentals. I taught chess in schools. I was about 1,000, and I was like a god compared to these kids, right? Yeah. It's just like rating is really irrelevant at that point. If you know the pin, they're like, oh, wow, that's amazing. So, but yeah, it was a lot of fun.
Yeah.
Okay. So you got to like 1,500, by playing long games. You've gotten probably play winning chess by Sarawan, logical chess move by move. What comes next? How do you move from, say, 1500 to 1600? Did you plateau there for a bit, or did you just kind of switch up what you were doing?
Yeah, I can't really, it's so long time ago, so I can't really remember exactly what it was, but I also think, like, I also played the Blitz chess in this period. Okay. It's literally hard to remember what exactly pushed me. I think, like, it helped because, like, in the internship, there was also a lot of stronger players working at the organization. So we also practiced together, and being part of that was also really helpful. Also because, like, it motivated me to like, I want to be as good as them. It was good to be. Have some competition and not just like I am really good and I don't need to improve because if you have something to look up to, I think that was helpful.
Yeah, that sounds like the plus minus thing that I keep hearing about from like James Altucher and Jesse Cry, right? Of like having the people better than you and then having the people worse than you, that you kind of like span that whole range.
Yeah, I think that's some really good elements in it because like when you teach others, you have to formulate the thoughts and you will see holes in your own game when you can explain it in a good way, and also when you have something to look up to, it motivates you to work even harder. So
yeah, I remember for myself, I was working with this friend of mine. He was 1000. I just come back to chess, and I was playing the Roy Lopez, and I was showing him the black side of it, and he was like, "I don't understand. So you've moved your bishop a whole bunch of times and let me develop all these pawns. How is this good for you?" And I was like, because it just is. And that's when I realized I know nothing about the Roy Lopez and I need to start learning about it. So
yeah,
in that moment, I could not explain it at all. And it was even in that moment where I was like, you're right. Maybe this isn't even good. So yeah. What a great question he had for me.
Yeah.
Okay, so it's hard to remember all the way back then, but you said you got stuck at 1600 for a while. How long were you at 1600?
I can just I think I was like back to like for until three years ago I made a jump from 1600 like almost straight to 1800. I had some good tournaments, and I think I got into like a streak where I didn't had any losses for 15 games over the board.
Oh my goodness!
And I had I think my performance rating was about 2100 at that period. I made a jump, and then. And then my opportunities to play over the board has just slowed down. It's hard for me to like say what is my real feeder rating when I can't play enough to like prove myself.
Yeah.
So that's like I want to play more, but it's also I have to put it off just for the next yeah, so maybe a longer. We'll see.
Yeah, with a young new child.
Yeah. So yeah. It's and my oldest is only 10, so like we have a lot of compressed.
Yep. I hear you. I only have 2 kids, and like we have 4 soccer games a weekend and stuff like that. And it's like, okay, imagine if I had 4 children, I'd be like, all right. You 2 children are allowed to do things. You ones are not.
it's like a logistical puzzle sometimes, but it's interesting.
Yeah, exactly. I think it's really interesting. It really sounds like you've been playing the long game here, right? Like you've been at this for a long time. You understand right now, you're like, probably for a year or so, it's going to be a little less, but that's okay. I know on the other side, I'll be able to come out and play more. I think that's fantastic, like, that you're able to do that.
I think with time I have gone had like to reimagine, like I made a YouTube channel, and like my goal was like to get from my current rating to Feedy Master in 5 years, and when I look back at it, I can see like that was maybe a little bit optimistic, and also with my maybe under optimal conditions. And if I didn't have to go have a job, and I couldn't, maybe I could have a small chance. But but now I see more clearly that like 50 ELO points a year maybe is a good aim to have and see long term. I wrote a long newsletter post about like my grind from Blitz rating on chess.com, where I had an account since 2012. So like I wrote an blog post about how my rating fluctuated up until I reached 2000 here recently.
Wow.
So and it was like I was at some point I was down to 1100 when I think it was just when we had our second child, I was like down to 1100 in bits on chess.com, and then I have slowly worked my way up. So it's I think it's healthy to as an adult to like have a long perspective and not expect like rating gains monthly. Maybe when you're just starting out, you can like see a very good improvement when you like make small adjustments. But like when you're getting more experience, you need to work a lot more and yeah, it goes slower.
Yeah, I think it's cool though that you have some evidence, right? That you can do it. Given more time, you've shown that you've made this huge jump in the Blitz side, and you also showed you made a pretty quick jump in the classical side. All we need is more time. So this is what we need to do. We need like a GoFundMe, and you just take a year off your family and your job, and you just play chess for a year, and we'll see where you get. It'll be an experiment.
Yeah. Yeah, Kevin, that's why I published chess books, like this is a master plan, like how can I long term become a professional amateur chess player.
I'm also on the long term plan, but what I'm realizing is I feel like I'm in a race against time itself, right? Because I'm getting to that age where it's like I don't feel a big drop off yet in mental faculties, but I know it's coming. And so like I'm racing, like packing more and more information, knowledge, and skill, and trying to have that go up faster than my mental faculties decline so that I can hit like 2000 before, you know, like I just can't quite do it anymore. So we'll see. Maybe that won't happen, Martin. Maybe I'll be 98 and improving.
Yeah, as a, like if you like compared to football or soccer, like you see, like the big stars getting older and older. Messi and Ronaldo are still playing, and Larsson is also still going strong. So it's maybe the technology will help us stay fresh longer and healthy living, maybe also. So
I'll hook my brain up to like some new brain stimulation technology or something. I'm sorry, honey. I have to go away this weekend and recharge the noodle. That'd be cool. Okay. So I got to say, man, for someone who's published 7 chess books, I've only heard you mention 2 chess books so far. Are there any other chess books that have sort of resonated with you in this journey?
Yeah, I've gone like the How to Reassess Your Chest, I think was a book that made a big impression on me, and a book that I felt like gave way for some improvement. I brought it with me for a camping holiday with my family, and we tried to go very low tech on holiday. So like we have the books and stuff like that. So So I would spend a lot of time reading that during I think we were out camping for, I think, 20 days or something like that. So, and it is a tomb of like 600 pages or something like that. But I feel like that book was really good for me. It asked a lot of good questions and had some good instructive puzzles. So I really, really like that book. Then I have also Silman's Endgame book, but I really didn't really get into the groove of that one. Then I have also done the Yusuf Buff, two of the first books. Now I'm recently I just got back to solving some puzzles from Yusupov's books, because they high quality puzzles, but not so much prose theory. But it can be a little bit rough if you just decide to I want to do all 9 books in succession. So I think you need to leave like a little break between each Yusupov book.
Interesting. I have the first one, and I don't know. I feel like it's a me problem, but I couldn't get through it. What would happen is I'd be like, "You're right, Yusupov. I do have this weakness in my game." And then the next chapter would be about something totally different. I'd be like, "No, what are you doing, man?" What did you make of them? Did you like that approach of kind of like covering everything? How did it work out for you?
It is a little bit jumpy in the way that it's structured, and sometimes you're like, "Oh, now I just looked at the evolution book," and then he mentions, "Okay, you did this chapter about that in the first book. You remember that, right?" And I can't really know, but like it's very well thought out in a way that does like. Later on, you get like a position later in a study that was pointing back to a bit that you learned in the first book. So I think it's like the quality is very high, and so I can understand why it's recommended for so many years. It's a good book in my opinion, but I understand why you think like it's a little bit fragmented.
Yeah. I'm just really upset with myself, though, because I feel like it is a good book. And if I could just ignore... Okay, so it's basically Yusupov is a world-class trainer telling me the technique I should use. And I'm like, no, Yusupov, I know more than you. I would rather do it this way. Like, what kind of ridiculous level of arrogance is that?
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. But for other books, I've also used Chessable I discovered it quite early on, and I like the lot of free material on the platform, and later I also bought some opening courses and also did a course on porn. In games that I think was really beneficial for me at that point. I can't remember what the name of it is.
But is it a free one or a pay one?
It is a paid one, not very expensive though. Yeah. But maybe you have followed Omar doing the porn end games from my own book, The Tactic Ladder. And I think that's they are really good calculation exercises, and you can also win a lot of games with knowing these porn end games. So that is a good way to spend your time, I think.
I agree. I think pawn end games is one of those things where it's so repeatable, the knowledge. Like once you have this knowledge, it comes up in so many games versus, I don't know, some other random rook end game where you're just kind of like, okay, if this exact coordination happens, I'll be ready, but let's be real, I'll have forgotten it by the time we get it. Whereas a lot of those basic pawn end games, I feel like that was a big moment for me. Like learning opposition and like really knowing it changed. I think it's like 100 ELO, just knowing opposition stone cold.
Yeah. It also helped you calculate because, like, you know, when you know it's a winning drawn or a losing in game resulting from a line you're calculating, then you can quickly discard it or go for it if you and like very strong players, like they just recognize it instantly. So
exactly. Instead of a 12 move calculation, it's a 2 move calculation. You're just like and I lose opposition, and 12 moves later they queen out. I don't need to calculate that. I got
I
was just gonna ask you about these puzzle books. I haven't gotten them yet, but Omar has made them so compelling that I'm like, that, you know, it's the problem of chess books, because I have like 30 chess books I'm working on. So I'm like, why not add these? They sound amazing. So can you give our audience a quick rundown on what this puzzle ladder looks like, and like, why'd you come up with it, and what's its goal?
Yeah, the basic idea was like to create a ladder for chess improvement and with puzzles, and the Light Chess puzzle database contains millions of puzzles that you can download. So I downloaded the puzzle database and created like a giant Excel sheet, and then the puzzles also has a rating, user satisfactory score. So I like. I picked all the highest rated human rated puzzles, and the lightest puzzles are all from games played on the platform. So my idea was to then sort it by difficulty, so you can buy a book, chess book with puzzles, at the same level throughout the book. I have experiences with many books. Like it start off with some easy puzzles, and then it gets hard, and then you're dead, and it can't use the book anymore because it's so hard. The idea was like to just create a lot of puzzles on the same level, and then. They are not annotated, so like each book contains 1,000 puzzles, and then the line at the end of the book as a solution. So you have to figure it out yourself. And I think that can also be sometimes it can be a little bit like when you read the solution, and the grandmaster tells you, oh, you overlook that, and you can feel like a little bit stupid. But in the compared to like when you just get the solution one line, then you have to like, okay, you have to look a little bit further yourself and try to figure out why your solution failed. And I think like when Omar has posted the solution, he has also like gone into played it against the engine and tried to analyze it himself. So I think it gives way for you to work a little bit for finding the real truth of the solution. But the book is also like it's quite cheap compared to like an annotated puzzle solution book. So you can take like if you're solving puzzles on compared to like on Lightchess or chess.com, you can say, okay, I have taken all the best user rated puzzles and made it into a book you can bring with you to the beach or wherever you want to solve your puzzles.
Yeah. Do you encourage people to write out analysis for this, or do you think it's more of like you look at the puzzle, you think of the answer, and then you check it?
Yeah, in the introduction, I laid out different possibilities because I also thought that people could use it like a woodpecking method, like because like that book has also been a little bit criticized for being too hard for many beginners or intermediate players. So I thought, okay, you can also like doing cycles of the puzzles if you want to. So each chapter has 100 puzzles, and you can like do cycles through it. But I I also write, like, you can also cut it up like Neil Bruce style, and if you want to do that. So it's yeah, and you can also just, but I encourage people to like write out the solution on a piece of paper and then check afterwards. That's the best way.
I know I saw Omar was working on an endgame one. Do you have specifically different ladders for different phases of the game? Is that how it works?
The blue one, the blue series is for the 1400 feet level, and there's an endgame book only with endgame puzzles, and then there's an opening and middle game second volume. Okay. And then I have made a red volume for 2000 feet array puzzles.
Oh, wow. Can you solve these?
What?
Can you solve these?
They are quite hard. So I've working on it, and it's with moderate success. They are really challenging, those puzzles. But that's just one volume where in-game opening and middle game puzzles are combined into. Because when you move up to that difficulty, the number of puzzles in the database shrinks. So if I wanted to ensure that there was only puzzles rated above a certain rating, then I had to make a compromise. But next one I plan to do is for 1,000 feet level.
Okay. That was going to be a question I had. But then also, you say it's 1,400. Is it like 1,400 to 1,500, or is it 1,400 to 1,999?
It's the puzzles range from 1,400 and to up to 1,499.
Oh, okay. Gotcha. So it's pretty narrow.
Yeah. So, but the lightest puzzle rating is not equivalent to feeder rating. So I have like said, estimated that there's a 400 point rating fall from the puzzle rating to the feeder rating. So like if the 1400 feeder rating contains 1800 and upwards to 1899 rated puzzles.
Gotcha. It seems to me like you've just really missed out on an opportunity to just every 100 points have 3 books. And so you're like, my empire now is up to 40 books.
Yeah, but the thing that you missed, like, is like I have convinced my brother to help me like make a code that can make it into a chess book, but with the diagrams and stuff like that, but there's still a lot of editing with the solution, so I have to press a lot of enter and shift and stuff like that to make it look just as neatly as I want to. Gotcha. So I don't feel like it's it's my favorite activity to like edit in Word. So, but yeah, so I try. It's, I think also like 80 book series might not sell as well. So I think like 200 point jump is good enough.
Okay. All right. Okay.
And if I complete this, I think at least there will be like, it will be contain more puzzles than the Polka books and stuff like that. So I think it will be the largest puzzle collection published if I succeed, I think.
That's pretty impressive. I'm going to beat you. And this is what I'm going to do. I'm going to release in one volume all of the Lee Chess Puzzle Database. It's going to be the thickest book there is.
The shipping cost will be immense.
Good luck with that one, Amazon. Let's see you ship that for free.
They will have to construct special drones to deliver your books. To...
yeah, it's going to need like 7 drones. It's like an army of drones that's going to bring it in. All right. Well, I'm excited about this. I have a birthday coming up. I think I'm going to ask for the end game puzzle book for that for my birthday, and I'll let my audience know what I think about it. I'm sure that I will love it. All right. Next question for you. The chess punks. What's with the chess punks? I mean, Neil Bruce gets a lot of the credit for co-founding the chess punks. But what was your role in this enterprise, Martin? Let's wrest some credit away from that guy.
It's going to be hard, but like I yeah, I joined the Twitter at I think it was 2017 or something like that, and then I discovered a few people tweeting about the chess, and I started to follow it, and then decided to, like, I've had Twitter for a long time, but then I decided to actually send a tweet out, and that was I had to it was hard to like just join a community, and no one liked my first tweets. I think I look back to them and like there was no engagement. But slowly, like, I connected with these few people that tweeted about chess at around my level, and at some point I proposed that we should have a hashtag, and then Neil came up with the name. I think it was like that, and it kept growing through the years, I think it was really great. I remember, like, I had like a chess blog at some point. I think it was called saychessblog.com or something like that, where like I made a manifest where like had like I said like it should be a goal that everyone should be able to like write and share thoughts about chess without being judged as because I thought like at this point chess was a little bit elitist, and I also like I tried to also accomplish this by also publishing my books, which is like can be seen as like, well, only grandmasters and should publish chess books and stuff like that. But I think I've proved them wrong, that it is possible if you do it in the right way. And so I'm happy about that. But I think Neil should have a lot of credit, because he has done a lot of work promoting it, and also with his award and merch and stuff like that. I think I'm more like using the hashtag once in a while, and I also organized some tournaments at some point that was quite successful. I think it was called the Twitter Chess Tournament, something like that, and we had a lot of fun with that.
I've got my medal right here. Neil sent it to me for my shocking win of Chess Punk Creator of the Year. So I'm really thankful to the
Chess Punk. Oh, congrats.
That's still wild to me. I feel like I should have been like number 9 or something in the ratings.
Nah, you're doing a great job. And your podcast is really inspiring, because you're like, you're talking to people like, I can really I feel the mindset of the people you're interviewing. So that's like great for the community, I think. So,
yeah, I appreciate that. And I like what you said about this whole idea of when I started chess the first time, like in very early 2000s, it really felt like, how dare you try to add something to the chess community if you're not like I am or above. That guy, his name is like Jake De La Maza, whatever, wrote that book about like chess improvement, and it was like just slammed by grandmasters, like, how dare you claim anything, in fact you were probably cheating. And it's like, wait, what? Like, that's how much you're just not supposed to contribute to the community unless you're a grandmaster. When I came back, I couldn't even imagine I would make a podcast. I've made a lot of podcasts about things I'm interested in because it's a genre I really like, but I was like, chess, that's off limits. I remember, off limits. Unless I can become an IM, I got to just be quiet and play my chess. It's been very freeing that people like yourself and Neil and the Chess Punks community have kind of like opened this space up where it's like, no, actually, you know, regular people sharing their thoughts is actually helpful for other regular people.
Yeah.
Majority of chess improvers.
Yeah. I think that's one of the good things about the involvement of the community. Like, it's opening up people to join and that wouldn't otherwise have been vocal about chess. And I think that we should continue on that path because, it's sad if people can't really share the joy of chess online and in real life as well. So. Yeah,
it's funny because I feel like Omar is one of my very favorite chess personalities, and I just can't imagine 20 years ago him having success. Right? People would be like, "What? Your rating disqualifies you from speaking about chess." And I just love how today, you know, that just is not the same. Yeah. We got to make sure we hit your accountability program because I find this to be really fascinating. I'm going to be honest, Martin. You posted about this. And I instantly went to click on it. And I was like, yes. And I was like, wait. I've kind of changed my mindset a little bit. I used to like have a spreadsheet where I logged everything. And for me personally, it started becoming like a check the box rather than like actually doing the work. So I'm like, I'm trying out this new thing, but I think I'm going to go back to it. But let me know, why should I join this accountability program? What will it do for me?
Yeah, like I think the idea of the accountability group is like two things. Like one thing is like you need to know how much time to really put into chess training because I think a lot of adults like they think they use a lot of time on chess but when in reality they maybe spent 60% of the time on chess Twitter and then some time on YouTube and some time on Twitch and then when you come to the hard puzzles and hard sections of the book it's easier to skip over to something more enjoyable and then say, oh yeah, it's my hobby, it should be nice and yeah. I should have a cup of tea and relax with this and I have had a long day so the idea was,
and then
like,
also okay, why aren't I getting better?
Yeah that's the other part of the problem. So then it's something I struggle with myself, like how do I stay accountable, because I want to reach my goals but at the same time it's hard. And last year I made a YouTube video where I tracked how much time I spent on chess and I tracked everything, just chess Twitter, YouTube and stuff like that. And I could see that there was a lot of wasted time. And I actually like the concept of tracking. I also like when I go for a run, I like to track it and then there was somebody mentioning there was this app called Strava where you can connect with friends and then they can like your recent run and you can get some feedback from that. And I thought, okay, like, can I make something like similar with chess? And then I found like there's a site called Clockify, and I made a group in there, and if you join, then you can like see how much you can log, how much training you do, and there's different categories like over the board, classical chess, opening reviews, puzzles, calculation exercises. So you can like monitor how much to use on each section, and then I made the rule that you can't register like a blitz or rabbit chess in this so it should only be like the more serious stuff you track then you can also see how much time does the others in the group spend on chess and what are the sessions what are they working on and then I have this Clockify, I have connected with a chat group where I have like it's only 3 years, it's 3 weeks old, so like it's still standing up and developing, but like 230 people have joined already. So and in chat group, I will try to encourage people to, like, to share their weekly training goals and follow up on last week's training, and then we have set up so far two book reading groups, so some people are going through Ogor's calculation books, and another
Masters. That's cool.
Yeah, and I have that book, and I thought, okay, I can join in, and I don't know if you saw that I got I spent 46 minutes on one puzzle managed to solve successfully, but there was for the first 20 minutes I was just staring at it, and that's I didn't really know what to do, but eventually it came to me. But I think there's something with when you press the record or press the start, then it's harder for yourself to do another, just skip for an easier thing, because you have already committed to doing that activity you have written down, and you know that, okay, now the others in the group can see that I'm actually working on this. So
I really like that. So it's actually a timer built into it. So you say, you click it and then you start doing your activity.
Yeah, you can do it, do it timer mode, or you can also do it calendar mode if you like, or can't do it at that moment or something. But you can have it as an app or on your browser as well.
Oh, that's really cool. I like that a lot, because I one of the reasons why I stopped tracking it is because I started to realize it was too subjective. I would just be like, okay, I went over a Karpov annotated game. I don't know how long that took. Was it 15 minutes? Was it 35 minutes? I'll say 25. And it just, that's one of the reasons why I stopped, because I was kind of like, I don't know, this feels really, it doesn't feel entirely accurate. And if it's not going to be accurate, then why am I even doing it? So I really love this idea of having the timer built right into the activity.
Yeah, so it's very accurate in there. And then every Monday you will get an email in your inbox where you can see how many sessions you had during the week, and how much did it add up to. So it's not really focused on any program of certain things, books you have to read, or so you can be part of any other training program if you want to, and still do this without having any problems. So but it's very orientated on the process of doing the training that you want to do, and not skipping over to easier activities.
Sounds pretty amazing. I did hear a mistake though. You didn't say Chess Twitter as one of the activities you could clock. You're like, I logged 3 hours of Chess Twitter.
It's a great day today.
Well, that sounds awesome. I think I'm at least going to check it out. Pretty much as soon as we stop this interview, I'm going to go check it out. So what's the best way to find it? Is it through your Substack? Is it through Twitter? What think is the best way to find this?
Yeah, I decided, I started it through my Substack is new publication called sayches.substack.com, but I decided I didn't want to spam all those who are not interested in this. So I made a Substack called Chess Training Accountability Group.substack.com. So if you subscribe to that, then you will get an email with the instructions, and it's free to join.
Okay, that's cool. A magic word right there.
Yeah. I don't know if that makes people less accountable, but I hope I like the idea to keep it free for people, and it is a kind of an experiment, we will see how it evolves, but so far people have been really positive about it, and they have experienced this week I really got some focused work done, and so
nice. So yeah, it sounds great. All right, last line of questioning for you, Martin. What about a coach? I haven't heard anything about a coach. Have you had a coach at all in your run? Have you had coaches at different points? What kind of impact has coaches had on you?
Yeah, I've had a couple throughout the years. Early on, I was had some coaching with about from a I think Bulgarian IM named Valerie Lilov, I think. But he went in onto screenwriting or something like that. But
okay,
yeah. He always said, never move backwards, Martin. Never move backwards." Okay. And I think that's something I need. I need to work on being like an aggressive player, because I'm not I've also played American football, and my coach always wanted to me to be like more. I need to go kill the opponent and.
Okay.
Yeah, so that's something I need to work on. But then I also had several others, but I never really got into like finding something I had for a long period of time, both of time issues and also like sometimes it can also be expensive to take lessons if you feel like you don't have the time maybe to play. So then you can feel like okay, then it's maybe a little bit expensive. I like take all this these fancy lessons, and I don't have time to play over the board. So that is where I find it most useful, is like to go over once games and we'll get some feedback from a coach and hear what his or her thoughts are about once game. And also like chess can be a lonely game sometime, and it can be good to have somebody to look out for you. So
okay,
but that's also like some of the things I have tried to like implement in this accountability group, like this trainer accountability, like because I've set up like certain specific groups in the chat where you're like, you can like, if you want have a goal to train 1 to 4 hours a week, then you can join that channel. And if you're like want to train more than 10 hours a week, you can join this channel. And it's quite healthy to see like how much other chess players actually train, because like some of those people in the group, they have logged like over 20 hours of training in 1 week. So like really, really impressive effort. Wow.
Martin, are they liars? I just gotta ask.
Are we having a cheating scandal in my accountability group? I don't hope so.
It seems like it'd be pretty easy to cheat too. You just click a button.
Don't ruin it, Kevin.
Oh my goodness. Wow, Kevin has been doing it 80 hours a week this week. That's impressive. Yeah,
I had to write an email to one of the users, because he had a 100-hour correspondence analyst session going. But
wow,
yeah,
oh my.
But he forgot to end his training session.
Or maybe he just counts. Since it's correspondence, he's always thinking about it in the background.
yeah.
All right. Well, that sounds pretty great. It sounds like what your thoughts on coaches are, they can be useful, but if you're not playing regularly and you're not able to sort of implement the coaching, it just kind of feels like if it was free and you had endless time, sure. But there's a cost both in time and in actual cost. And if you're not using the coaching, maybe it's not as worth it.
Yeah. And also like every coach has like a different perspective. So like, and they want to do specific things. And then maybe when you're an adult, you have like your own ideas of how to do things. And then it could be hard like to find somebody that where you actually agree about their method. And if you like have a like slight like it's hard to find like a good partner. And like I think that there was an article about the Gukesh and his trainer, and like where they was like the Gukesh like believed 100% in his coach and did everything he was told to, and then it was of course very effective. I think it's harder for an adult just to like follow the leader 100% when you are used to having an influencing and say in everything in your adult life.
I mean, and most adults have been pretty successful at something in their life, right? So they just kind of think like, I've had this success here. I should be able to translate it to chess. And I know myself. Yeah. I know myself better than this random guy on the internet knows me.
Yeah. So
you can see that.
That's a challenge, I think.
Yeah. And you're right. It's different with kids. Like my daughter, I tell her something in chess and she's just like, okay, that's a fact. And I'm like, wow. Like, I'm not even that good at chess. Like what I say is not actually a fact. It's just probably, it's possibly wrong, in fact.
But you need to give me some pointers, because I've been unsuccessful with getting my kids to even like chess. They just shake their heads when I talk about chess.
It's a challenge. My oldest child really hates chess now, because my youngest child and I talk about it a lot. So to her, it's this annoying thing that's always going on. I think it's hard to strike that balance of like getting them to be interested in it while not annoying them. So I got kind of lucky so far with the younger one. So we'll see. But I've done a lot of tricks, man. I've made battle passes where she like earns other things she likes by doing chess related activities. I've taken her to tournaments and I say it's half about the chess and half about the adventure. So we always do something really cool when we go to chess tournaments. So it's not just like driving to this lame building and sitting in a chair for a few hours. So I've tried a lot of stuff to make it at least so it's fun. And then also honoring her when she says like, I'm tired of this, I want to take a few months off. It's like, cool, that's your business. Like,
you
do you. So
sounds like a good approach.
Yeah. My number one tip is don't force it. They'll just hate it, is my guess. Maybe I'm wrong. Maybe I have a chance to have a future world champion downstairs, but I'm not pushing her hard enough. So, but that's just not how I believe in doing it. Well, Martin, what a great conversation today. I'm really excited about this chess training accountability group. I'm excited to pick up some of your books. I gotta say this, I can't believe you haven't been on the podcast yet. I figured you were gonna be like one of the first three people. Shivam was coaching me when I started and he was like, we should get Martin on. And I was like, yeah, he'd be a great guest. And here we are like 68 episodes later, finally chatting. So thanks so much for coming on, Martin.
Yeah, Kevin, I would like to gift you my book, so I will gladly send you an early birthday present for you, so you can get started.
That's quite generous of you. I'm trying to decide if I should murder them all Neil Bruce style, but I don't think I will. I don't have it in me to cut up chess books.
Yeah. But thank you for having me, and yeah, good luck with your next tournament.
All right. Thank you so much. Have a great one.
Great.
All right. And everyone out there, thanks so much for stopping by today. I really hope this is that week where you jump from 1600 all the way to 1800. But if it's not and you're stuck in that plateau, don't worry. So many of us are. It's the norm. Keep at it. And next week I'll have another guest to come on and tell you what's been working for them, or maybe what hasn't been working for them. But either way, it'll be entertaining. I'll see you next week, everybody. Goodbye.